Welcome back to another episode of the Salty Nerd Podcast, where we talk about the greatest show on streaming, Warrior. Today we're talking episode 7. What's the title again, Jude?
Gotta be crooked to get along in a crooked world.
Welcome back, everybody. As always, we're going to be discussing the latest episode of Warrior.
You're joined.
I'm joined. Yes, I'm going to probably put some salt on this episode, but oh. I'm joined as always by Jude.
Hi. Hello.
What's up? Also, Kadish is here.
Yes, I am. And I don't know why you would have salt for this episode because it was amazing.
I mean, I'll get there. We'll get there. It's fast travel stuff. And
joining us via internet.
Via the internet.
Hello. from my bunker.
Yes.
Deep inside.
From his sick room.
Vader. Unfortunately, Vader is not feeling well today.
we told him to get out of here.
Yeah, I'm like, don't come to the studio, dude. I got to travel soon.
Don't you put that voodoo on us, Ricky Bobby.
And he has already chugged half a bottle of Dayquil.
Yeah.
Where's your bottle at right now?
I haven't touched it. I bought it. I chugged it. And, you know, that's where we're at. Yeah,
that's okay. At least like 3 shots of Dayquil.
I'm a big dude. I can't. Double shots.
Listen,
don't judge me.
I'm a man.
Real quick, before we get into this episode, I wanted to give a nice special shout out.
Yeah.
My friend Matt, he has a daughter, Michaela, who is 11 years old, just turned 11 recently. And she is an experienced MMA fighter.
Yeah.
I've seen some videos of her kicking butt on the mat. And I'm like, this chick reminds me of like somebody like a toy.
Like Lie.
Or a toy or something like that. So I just wanted to give her a shout out because she's freaking awesome. I wanted to encourage her to continue her training and become an even more, I can't say the swear words, but you know what I'm saying. Like, be freaking awesome at what you're doing. I really encourage everybody, especially young girls, to learn how to fight, learn how to defend themselves. And the videos that I've seen of her in actual competitions are pretty impressive. Mm-hmm. So continue on that path. It's amazing. And you can be just as awesome as some of the women in this show that we love so much. So shout out to Michaela.
We should also give shout outs to number one, the gross brunette, not a redhead.
Yes.
Not a ginger. Yeah. Who got some sticky this episode.
Good for her.
Yeah, she's commented on our videos. And also, apparently, the German prostitute from the previous episode.
Yeah, I think her name's Larissa Jordan.
Yes, Larissa Jordan. She reached out to us on Instagram and said, thank you for our review. And I said,
honestly,
it was before our episode even came out. And I was like,
she's amazing.
I'm like, you're just going to have to wait until Thursday because you're the star of the whole show. Yeah. Like, we didn't give a crap about anything else but you for that whole show.
When can we start talking about that girl?
So I made sure to put as much footage of her in our podcast as I possibly could
without getting demonetized.
Yeah.
I messed around with some blur effects, but it just didn't work out quite right. So I was like, I gotta skip all that.
Yeah. I know we give not a ginger a lot of crap for not being a ginger,
right.
But I have really been enjoying her like adoration of the character of Buckley and like being the woman behind the man on his way to success.
Yeah, Lady Macbeth, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah, it's been fun. This last couple of weeks, we've been getting some attention from some of the cast and crew, which is really cool. We always love when that happens, and we wanted to thank you guys for producing such an awesome show that entertains us. So thank you so much. All right, without further ado, episode 7. Jude, take it away.
Gotta be crooked to get along in a crooked world. Picking up right after the fight, Father June has taken a bullet to the stomach and the fellow Chinese work to save him. After they get him home to convalesce, it seems he isn't the man he used to be. Bill arrives at his brother-in-law's cement mountain to learn his new job is in the pit of despair with the other laborers, and I think he had more fun working for the Long Z. A toy fends off an attack from another brothel owner who's come to take his property back with force. Later, Bridezilla Mai Ling mediates between the two as the other brothel owner. Fuck, I ruined my joke.
Bridezilla.
She is. Later, Bridezilla Mai Ling mediates between the two as the other brothel owner falls in Long Z territory. A toy's like, hey, remember when we survived the riot together? And Mai Ling's like, oh my God, did you hear I'm getting married? Strickland and Leary meet with Buckley to propose a deal for the mayor race. And later, Leary meets Kevin Spacey and comes to the same conclusion as the rest of us that Kevin Spacey sucks. Happy Jack is damn near giddy, thinking he finally got rid of Lee, when who should arrive with a full can of whoop-ass but Lee and his new best friend Chow. They've come to kill Jax and chew bubblegum, and they're all out of bubblegum. After Lee and his girlfriend are reunited in the bar, who else should pop by for a reunion? Agent Bosley of the Dick Department. Dumbass Lee turns in his dick badge, and Bosley informs him, "You don't turn your back on the dick." Wow. Assam tells Yanmi the tale of how they fucked up that silver deal and that sheet around her can't possibly be keeping her warm. She shows him her hidden stash for no reason, and he makes her lie and say she won't steal anymore. Hong and his boyfriend eat each other's nuts while walking through Chinatown. And while everyone was looking the other way, Father June, not in his right mind, goes on walkabout, and young June is freaking the fuck out. When Lee Young brings him home, he and young June share a moment of mutual respect, but then June turns back into an asshole 2 seconds later as he drinks his feelings and blames Assam for all their troubles. Leary heads into Chinatown to treat with Assam, and the two make a deal to keep men on both sides from dying. Thayer arrives at Buckley's office to concede the mayor race while Lai lurks just outside. After he leaves with Strickland, Buckley heads over to Pound Town and ruins Not a Ginger's dress. Discuss.
You gotta stop.
I never will.
They eat each other's nuts, which is actually what
it's
happened.
True.
It's true. It's not even a joke.
It did not even matter in the episode, but I could not talk about it.
I'm still trying to, figure out what that whole thing
is. I don't care about Hong and his boyfriend.
And that they were eating roasted walnuts.
Roasted walnuts. Yeah, V, I'm with you, man. We're almost at the point now where I was with Blonde Slave Chick
and Davenport
and Atoy, that relationship. And I was like, I just
get to the fighting, bitches.
I just don't care. Like, this is a nothing relationship. It's not going anywhere.
Nobody cares.
Nobody cares.
There are relationships in this show.
Sure.
Is that what the show is about? Not necessarily, but I enjoy that they're putting relationships in so that it's not just like hitting you over the head with like tong fights.
Sure.
Battles and this and that. There are also lives being lived.
But remember. Go ahead, V.
All I want to see Hong do is go, "Okay, boss," and go mess people up. That's all I want to see Hong do.
Well, I mean, I don't mind having more Hong on the screen, and if they want to explore his relationship with people, it's whatever, it's fine. Oh. But like, I hope that there's a point to
this.
Listen,
he's Hong, and he's here to suck dong.
I think it's also important to note to point out that they've continued with the inside joke about how Hong just eats in every scene that he's in.
He does. He's always eating.
He's the Brad Pitt of Warrior.
Yeah.
I'm all for it. 100%.
Yeah.
But I just, like, if they're going to spend screen time, instead of showing us how Chow and Big Dick Lee fast traveled from Georgia back to San Francisco, instead they want to show us Hong hanging out with his boy toy. I'm like, if there's not a point to this, then we're wasting screen time. I want to see my favorite characters figure a way out of Georgia without getting arrested by the law,
let's give him the benefit of the doubt and say that they're building this relationship because his boyfriend also has something else going on. And they're introducing this character for a reason, other than just being a guy that Hong is fucking who will eventually die, that gives Hong more motivation to fight.
Sure.
That's what I don't want to happen.
You don't want that to happen?
No.
That's exactly what I want to happen.
So can we talk about the fast travel just for a second?
Yeah, please. Yeah.
So this episode basically starts with Awesome and Young June showing up with a wounded Father June at the Hopway headquarters. And so they've come back from Northern Nevada.
Supposedly
with Father June
Silvertown
bleeding the entire way.
Yeah, with a gut wound.
So they either made it back in record time or it's been a full week.
They probably had a dragon.
So, no, here's the thing. And I'm giving this the benefit of the doubt because my bigger issue is with Chow and Big Dick. But I understand this is also fast travel. You can live with a gut wound for a long time.
According to Quentin Tarantino, yes.
Yeah, for a couple of days. And it's very painful and it's very dangerous, but you can go a long time. So if it takes them a full 48 hours or something to get from where they were to back to San Francisco, fine. Okay. I wish I would have seen something, but I can get it. I can wrap my head around that.
Yeah, so. But here's, I don't know, I think a more realistic perspective is that they traveled from where shit is going down, and the ride from there to San Francisco is probably a day at least.
24 hours?
Yeah.
Sure.
But they probably stopped somewhere in between there to have some medical assistance. But they didn't tell us.
Yeah, I mean that's all headcanon. And also, so like with Chow and Big D Lee, you know, it takes them about a week to go cross country from California to Georgia, right? Mm-hmm.
He's been gone a while.
By train. And then in this episode, they show back up in what's admittedly a badass scene. But you have to think like, okay, maybe the chronology of their timeline doesn't quite line up with the chronology of Awesome and the Jones.
Right.
Yeah, because if they left around the same time, and then Young June and their squad went to the mining town and then back to San Francisco in a couple of days. Go ahead, V.
I've got to figure it out. I asked the our almighty ruler and future leader, ChatGPT, in 1877 via rail, how long did it take to get from Georgia to San Francisco? And basically, he says there was no direct route from Georgia to San Francisco. Traveling from Georgia to San Francisco by rail in 1877 would have required taking multiple trains and routes, making the journey quite lengthy and complex. But basically, in the end, it would take a week or so.
Yeah.
So so my only thought is that in the previous episode, when Chow and Lee were captive on the train and going to Georgia, there was some time passing between the end of episode 5 and the beginning of episode 6, where basically they were already close to Georgia by the time like our story picked up with them. And but it is kind of weird because it's like, yeah, like they just show back up. It seems like they had time to like coordinate with the barmaid and all this other stuff. So the timelines, they're not adding up.
No, definitely not. There's some fast and dirty writing going on.
But you know what good old JT would say to that?
Who cares?
Don't think about it.
Yeah, yeah. He'd be like, shut up, nerd. It's just a TV show.
Well, actually, this was based on a real journey that someone
Watch him pull something out of his hat. Like, well, actually, this is what really happened to these characters in this real world scenario. And we're all going to look like idiots, but either way. I also was really like, okay, is this the episode where Happy Jack got shot?
Yes.
Okay.
which was an amazing scene. Like, they really started that one off with a bang.
It was really cool. Also, how are they not getting heat for that? Happy Jack had a gang, and his right-hand man was like his muscle, who was also there when they betrayed Big Dick Lee and Chow, and also the guy who was counting the counterfeit money. So, like, where's that dude at?
The only thing I could think of is that if this is like a hierarchy where, like, Young June takes over for Father June, Barmaid is now the new Happy Jack.
Yeah, that doesn't track.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because she's
that.
A woman. But
no, it's just like she's not a part of the gang.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's weak. Is he a real gang, though?
Well, I would say this. So, like, basically, Chow and Big D Lee teaming up and coming back for revenge, and the unceremonious killing of Happy Jack, like, just right off the
bat. It's a great team up.
It was a fantastic scene. Like when Happy Jack gets shot, you're just like, oh, shit.
Yeah, I literally was like, holy crap, did he shoot Happy Jack? Like, just like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, it's cool. I love seeing Big Dick Lee and Chow work together.
And the irony of it was, it was the first time we actually saw Happy Jack being happy. Before he got unceremoniously destroyed.
He's like dancing in the friggin' streets and stuff. He's like, this is a great time to be alive. Pow.
and so like his, was it niece-in-law or sister-in-law?
Niece-in-law, I think.
Sure.
So she's the one who blows open his chest with a shotgun.
Right.
But it's Chow who finishes the job.
Shoots him in the head.
Double taps.
Dude. Savagery.
Yeah.
I'm loving this new brutal Chow.
And it was a total Lethal Weapon moment, too, because it's like Chow and Big D, you know, like together again for the first time, you know?
Yeah, I love the team up.
Yeah.
I just feel like they took this huge story that could have been told, and they went and like,
yeah,
they shrunk it down to like 3 minutes.
Where's the story of
them getting back from Georgia? I was so upset. Yeah. I wanted
it could have been its own spinoff.
What I could have seen happening, and I think would have been really, really fun, and I'm not. This sounds stupid. I'm a better writer than you. No, I'm not. No, but I'm just saying.
But
like,
however,
if they spend the next two episodes of them tracking, like, give them 15 minutes of screen time tracking their way back,
half an episode.
And spoiler: then, they don't.
No, they don't. And then in the season finale, which I haven't seen yet, and then in the season finale, that's when they show up and they see all that's transpired since they've been gone. And now they're here for the big finale, which of course is going to be something to do with Strickland and the railroad and all that stuff.
And Mai Ling.
And Mai Ling and all that. And they mm-hmm. show up and they're like, holy shit. And then they just jump into the fray.
Mm-hmm.
They
have to pick sides.
Yeah. I think that would have been like out of context. Like, wait, hold on. Who did what now? What's mm-hmm. going on? Oh, we have to pick a side right now. So I think that would have been really cool.
So first off, let's talk a little bit about Big D. He comes back. He basically solved his problem with like the bounty because like all of his family's dead. So like no one's out there to put a bounty on him anymore.
Yeah. So there's no longer a bounty on his head, but he's still working for the Dick Department because of the bounty on his head.
Well, we discover that the other Secret Service guy who we last saw getting shot in a back alley, he survived.
Yeah.
What was his name again?
Called it.
Bosley. So Bosley comes marching back in and he's got a big scar on his face from where the bullet kind of grazed him. And I think he might have been the one who killed Happy Jack's second in command because that was a guy who tried to ambush him.
Oh, maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Probably.
But so Bosley comes marching back in. He's like, oh, you're back. And basically Lee gives him, you know, his badge back.
He's like, ting. Yeah. And Bosley's like, no, ting.
Yeah. So Big D's basically like, well, no one wants to, you know, put a bounty on me anymore, so I don't need to do this job.
And he's like, yeah, but you're still wanted for murder. And I'm assuming you probably just murdered two more people.
Uh-huh.
So
how many cousins are still alive?
Right? Yeah.
None?
Yeah. Huh, okay. You must be
still convincing. Working for the Dick Department.
Yeah. Yeah. Come on, Big Dick. Yeah. Not getting away with that.
So Big D tries to, you know, quit, and Bosley is not letting him.
As he would.
Yeah. Yeah. So basically,
he's good at it, though. He's a good dick.
Big D is a good dick.
And listen, y'all know, you find a good dick, you keep a good dick.
Thank you, my dear. It's good to know.
Always ruining my jokes.
We are not the official podcast for this show.
We are the official podcast for good dick.
And Big Dick. Big Dick Lee.
I'm on the wrong podcast.
So like that's the whole of Big D's arc in this thing, is we find out that the Secret Service guy's still alive and Big D has been drafted back into the Secret Service.
So here's another thing that I'm kind of a little frustrated with about this.
Okay.
I feel like we're back at square one. He's still in the Dick Department. He's still at odds with Chow. Nothing's happened. Their characters are literally in the same spot they were two episodes ago. Except now he doesn't have a wanted bounty and Happy Jack's out of the picture.
But those two
people were not super involved.
But they had a nice bonding moment, and Lee got to take care of his problem.
Yeah, which so, I'm sure is
and
helpful.
We did it all in three scenes over the course of two episodes.
Yeah, so, and you know. I'm honestly, if you think about it, like the thought of Lee and Chow working their way back to San Francisco from where they were, surely they had other hijinks and other problems and other things that they had to overcome, which would have like intensified their friendship or their camaraderie. And I would have loved to have seen that.
They wouldn't have had any money because they got taken without them really knowing, and they got robbed.
The train didn't wait for them.
Yeah, so like they had to have found, and like V just pointed out, it takes multiple trains to get from there to San Francisco. So how'd they pay for that? They're still wearing the same clothes that they were. There's a lot happening right here that I'm like, there could have been a whole new series.
Yeah. Could have done like two seasons of just them traveling.
Trapper sitting there being like, let me tell you why you guys are all wrong.
Yeah. I'm excited for him to school us on why we're wrong about this.
So
it's like, we're not wrong though. He's just got,
he's got too much on his plate to produce.
It's fine. I get it. Whatever. It's cool.
And
it's
just, also we're hoping,
seems very rushed.
We're hoping and assuming that there's a season 4, but there might not be any word about that. You know what I mean?
I thought there was.
Is there?
Is there? Is there not? I think there is.
I didn't hear anything.
I thought they were renewed till 5.
They are?
I thought. Am I?
I
Trapper?
I haven't heard that.
I haven't heard that
I
either.
I hope that's the case.
I hope, yeah.
I thought I read that somewhere. Oh, God damn it, me.
I'm hoping
I
now.
I don't know now.
So I can understand, like, okay, I have a lot to wrap up. I've been given one more season to do it. I'm just going to do it. So I understand the logistics of it and the real world scenario. Sure. I'm not trying to, like, shit on the show. But I'm like, God, man, I wanted so much more out of that storyline.
So speaking of wanting more storyline, no Penelope or Sophie in this episode again.
They're not coming back for this season.
But you know who liked my story about that when I posted it on Instagram? Andrew Koji. I posted that clip of us when we were talking about Penny.
Is he on strike? Can he come on?
I don't know. I don't know if he's an American actor or not. Or I think
he's British.
Yeah, he's British, so he might be able to. Hey.
Yeah, they have a different union over there.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, most of the show's shot in South Africa, so most of the not main characters are not from America. So,
cool. Yeah. But what did Koji have to say?
He just, like, when I posted the clip of us talking about Penny coming back as, like, a Batman villain, click. I was like, yes, please give me that, 100%.
Yeah.
Speaking of Batman villains, Buckley.
Always in the shadows.
So Buckley finally wins the mayorship, and he's so excited.
Buckley goes from Batman to Bruce Wayne in this moment.
Dude, Buckley has never been so happy.
Oh, my God. That dude is on cloud nine.
Know what? Not a ginger's never been so happy. She's like, destroy me and my dress.
Oh, yeah. He rips open her bodice.
Oh, my God.
He is going for it. But before that, when the runner-up of the mayor's comes in after he gets Stricklandized.
Mayor.
Whatever his name is.
Sure.
Stricklandized.
You've been Stricklandized. <Just kidding. laughs>
The Stricklandizer. He gets told.
Joker.
Yeah, he gets told he has to drop out of the race, or they're gonna throw his daughter under the bus, so to speak. And he's like, fine.
And
he's like, Buckley.
There's an actual good guy.
Yeah.
So
right?
He's like, all right, I'm not gonna let you destroy my daughter.
Yeah. So he goes to Buckley and he's like, you finally got what you wanted, I see. And they're spitting back and forth, and Buckley's just like, well, go ahead and have some fun with that family of yours. He lights up a cigar. It was the perfect, like, yeah, cool, yeah, man.
And then Buckley fucks.
Oh, God, dude. V, tell me about this scene.
We all got to see it.
Because I know you and I both are like, it's not something that I wanted or was expecting to see. Buckley boning.
He fucked her with his peg leg and everything. You know it.
He dropped his cane. Yeah. He put his cane down. He's like, I got this.
Yeah. He was like, I don't even need it. I stand on two legs right now.
I mean, it's literally the first time we ever saw Buckley, like, emote.
Yeah, that's the first time we've ever seen any kind of emotion out of this guy whatsoever.
And what was great is, like, the scene leading up to this, and so Strickland, Leary, they meet with Buckley, and they kind of lay down what's going to happen. And Buckley's like, I don't like owing anyone favors. And then Strickland just looks at him, he's like, then maybe you shouldn't be in politics.
Yeah.
It was a good Strickland, dude. That guy is playing, like, 4D chess against all these other people. Like, he is the true menace of this episode, of this season.
I kind
of
wish he was doing a Trump impression the entire season.
No, God, that would have just ruined it. It's like, we're out of the deal. You don't understand the deal here, Buckley.
Maybe you shouldn't be in politics. It's the greatest politics of San Francisco at this time.
Leary, you got to keep your men in line. Nobody likes angry Irishmen.
So, did we get a scene where Buckley was doing an acceptance speech in this
episode?
No, that was the next episode. Okay, sorry. Great scene coming up.
His acceptance speech in this episode was fucking the not a ginger.
Not a ginger, yeah.
It's my impression of not a ginger the whole time he's giving
his
speech.
She was so stoked. She's like, this is awesome. Like,
yeah. She's like, this is all I ever wanted.
Yeah.
She's like, I need to take off layers because I'm so fucking hot right now.
Winning seems, what did she say to him? Winning suits you or something like that? Yeah. It was not something I needed to see. But go Buckley.
I needed it.
Yeah. So let's take it down a notch and talk about what happened with Big Bill this episode.
I feel for this guy. Also, when did his brother-in-law become a dick? Has he always been a dick?
I think he's always been, because he was resentful that his sister was.
But it was like,
I've been taking care of your family. Please get your family out of my house.
Sure.
I'm never going to stop holding this over your head that I took care of your family.
He didn't even want to hire Bill, but his wife made him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was like, come work for me. I guess, keep taking care of you and your family. But then when Bill shows up, he's like, you're going to be my bitch.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the brother-in-law runs a concrete factory.
Yeah.
And basically Bill shows up thinking he's going to have a cushy office job. And he's like, oh, I can't be showing favoritism. So you're going to be out hauling concrete.
Don't even think about trying to escape.
That sounds terrible.
Hey, listen, there's a couple of scenes in this episode
that you totally relate to.
I'm watching Bill like just completely covered in dust, shoveling and carrying these bags around.
And when his bag explodes.
Oh, he's so frustrated. Yeah. And I'm watching this and I'm like, I've literally been in that exact same circumstance.
You trimmed your beard.
I did. You like it? My goal, I don't know. I have a hat on today because I didn't do my hair, but my goal is to look like Big Bill's younger brother. That's the best I can do. I can't look like Big Bill.
Stop it.
I'm trying to go for Big Bill's younger brother. And
put your glasses back on.
That's my goal.
Unabomber time.
These are nice glasses.
So one of the hardest scenes in this episode was, so like we see Bill, you know, basically doing this like hard labor. He's having to take a bath because he's old and his joints ache. And he comes in and the brother-in-law dresses him down by saying like, you're not keeping up with, you know, the rest of the crew. And he's like, I'm twice their age.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's like threatening to fire him. And it's just, he's super cringy and douchey.
But then he goes home and Lucy's like, you want to put some more work in?
Dude, Lucy...
She's the best wife. She's
amazing.
Yes.
She's amazing. And I
you want to practice putting another baby in me?
She's like, what am I going to do with a strong man around the house? And he's like, what did you just say? It was great. I love the relationship.
Let's get you cleaned up for my vagina.
Stop it, Jude.
She's like, I'm not a ginger either.
Stop it, Jude. Can't take it when you do that accent. It's just... Yeah, I don't know. I love the two of them together. They're so great.
They're the best. They're awesome. If she dies, I'm fucking done.
We riot.
Yeah.
But if Lucy gets hurt in any way, mm-mm, we riot.
Mm-mm.
Yeah. No.
Really?
Yes.
I care less about their kids, but if anything happens to Lucy, I'm fucking coming for you, Chopper.
Where are the kids?
I don't care.
Doesn't they have like four of them?
They have a lot.
They have like upstairs and
bed. Yeah. Twins too.
We haven't seen any of them in this whole season, have we? We've heard them like crashing around the brother.
I mean,
house.
What's his name wants him out of his house
for sure. I understand that completely.
She's like, I'm just gonna go. Cool, you keep the kids.
Yeah. When we get introduced to the brother-in-law earlier this season, I got like a playful like ribbing out of him when he's talking to Bill. He's like, hey, you're gonna get that chief job, get your family out of here. I took it as like a friendly ribbing. But it turns out he's real, real like pissy with Bill.
I got a very, I'm going to hold this over your head for the rest of your life vibe.
I don't like that. I don't like that guy.
I don't like him either.
I'm waiting for Bill to just go off on his brother-in-law.
But
it's going to end ugly when this ends.
Bill's still maybe going to end up with the chief job.
It's possible. Because he's not going to stay at the concrete plant.
Only so long that Kevin Spacey can keep Kevin Spacey-ing. And I think Bill's going to be right there.
He's not going to make it.
Not going to work here anymore anyway.
can we talk about Bridezilla Ling?
Oh, God. You
every single time she's on screen, she's like, by the way.
If you've heard, but I'm getting married. If you heard, but... Leong and I are engaged.
Did you hear?
I know.
She does it to a toy.
I proposed to him.
Yeah. She does it to a toy. She does it to Awesome. Who else does she do it to?
Everyone.
Everybody. Literally everybody. She invites everybody to the wedding.
Yeah. It's funny because we get a little Atoy subplot in this episode where a rival, pimp.
Yeah, owner.
Brothel owner is upset that his girls are now with Atoy. Yeah. And so he decides that he's going to go and try to get his girls back. And Atoy and him have like a little confrontation.
And then we find out, I don't know if it's in this episode or the next, but we find out that Davenport actually bought those girls off of him.
No. She got the police to take them away.
Yeah, the ducks took them.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, yeah. So like he didn't get any compensation for them, which is one of the reasons why he's coming back and demanding them back. And he's under the protection of Mai Ling. And so Mylene comes in to mediate this thing. And that's when she's like, oh, BT Dubs, I'm getting married. Yeah. Can you come to the wedding?
If you've heard, but I'm getting married.
So
be my bridesmaid.
To tell you the truth, I actually thought Mylene handled that whole situation pretty well.
Yeah.
Like as far as like a mediator and who's in charge and like yeah. who's going to get what.
She was like, yeah, I think he's a piece of shit, but he's under my protection.
Yeah.
So what are you bringing to the table? And then she's like, fucking take it.
Yeah, you
because
idiot.
I'm
you...
mediating here.
Yeah.
She has every right to fucking kill you, but you're under my protection, so take the money.
Yeah, I thought the way she handled that whole tabletop situation was, I can't think of any better way to do it.
Yeah.
I'm like, you're going to get compensated a little bit.
If you're mediating between two pieces of shit who own women, I mean, who do you side with?
Yeah,
it's a tale as old as time.
Well, you side with the woman, I guess. Yeah. But what was funny is that when Mylene goes to Awesome and she's like, you know, I'm getting married. I want you to be at the wedding.
Have you heard, but Liang and I are engaged.
And Awesome's reaction to that's just like, do you?
Do you?
he's like, you want me there to represent the Hopway? She's like, no, I want you there as my brother. And he's like, oh okay.
Are we
still good though?
Oh,
like, didn't we try to kill each other?
And, I kind of hate you though.
And she walks in on Awesome having some quality time with the printer girl.
Oh God, he is such a freaking teenager with her. He's like. Like throwing her around inside, like in plain view of everybody. Mm-hmm. I do want to say
he's gonna start like composing songs, like
oh my god, yeah,
mixtape.
Printer's daughter.
He's gonna be outside next to his giant wall statue, just holding a boombox, be like, please come and hang out with me tonight.
Some interesting stuff is happening with Father June in this episode. So, after they save his life from the gunshot wound, apparently that traumatic experience has knocked something loose in Father.
Well, I think he's had like a fever that has gone to his mental capacity.
It was really quick, but I was really curious because I thought I was really confused as to why Father June was having like brain problems.
Yeah.
So I went back and I watched the earlier part of the episode again to try and figure out if they said something. He has an infection he has a fever, a continuous fever that has affected his ability to think. It's affecting his brain. Mm-hmm. He's having a hard time with it and they can't kick the fever. So every scene that we see Father June in, whether or not he's like stable and actually talking with young June, which sometimes he has an infection.
Yeah.
And it's taking
a
toll on his body.
He's in between periods of lucidity and fever dream.
Yeah. Because I was like, well, if they were going to do this storyline, like, wouldn't it make more sense to have somebody like hit him on the back of the head or something? But it's the infection that's making him hallucinate and lose consciousness and stuff like that.
Young June does not like seeing his dad like this. Oh, God, and he feels so helpless. And there's
he's trying to hide him from it too. Like, so that the Tong doesn't know that his father is...
Well, he's trying to protect his honor.
Yeah.
And towards the end of the episode, basically, Father June goes on walkabout, and young June doesn't know where he is. He's very worried about him. And
Tong thinks nothing of it because they don't know.
Yeah. He wanders into Long Z territory, and the Long Z are kind of like messing with him. And, Father June in his delirious state, like, he thinks he's younger and he's going to scrap with these guys. He got, like a little knife.
And the Tong members are just, like, making a joke.
They're like, pushing him around. Yeah. And then Lee Young comes out. As he always does, like a freaking badass with his duster coat on, and takes him by the hand, puts his coat around him, and leads him back to Hopway territory.
The one guy with honor.
Yes. Dude,
I'm going to be honest with you. The way this was acted and portrayed.
He's becoming one of my favorite characters.
Lee Young's
my favorite character, too.
Yeah, Lee Young's awesome. He's the most honorable person in the show.
100%.
And the way that this whole thing was portrayed and acted by all parties across the board, like I was choking up a little bit.
When Young June sees him coming out of the fog with his father and realizes that he's there on like kind of like a mission of mercy almost. And Lee Young doesn't make a big thing out of it. He's just like, you know, your father needed help. Here he is. It was a beautiful scene.
Yeah.
Like it's about as sentimental as Warrior gets.
Easily taken Father June out.
Oh, yeah.
But he didn't. He walked him home.
Yeah. It was...
And it was really a sweet gesture.
It was a beautiful scene.
And young June was like, they had that moment where they locked eyes and they were like, I see you, you see me, I get you, you get me. But, and he walks in the house and immediately comes an asshole again.
But here's the thing, though, like with young June. So even though this was a nice gesture, he still doesn't trust the Long Z.
Yeah.
And he blames Ah-sam for the current state of his dad.
He's not wrong. I mean, the reason why that happened was because Ah-sam had to be the hero.
Because young June was making stupid decisions.
Not at the German silver mine place. That whole thing worked out. Everybody was happy. They had money. Everybody was good. Decisions were made that worked out for everybody in favor. Ah-sam saw that poor kid and was like, well, I got to go be the hero. And so from young June's perspective, he's like, you killed my dad, or you're killing my father.
And in addition to that, so young June is making moves to replace Printer Girl.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he's made it pretty clear that she's a liability. And so as soon as she's done training the guys, he plans to kind of get rid of her.
Yep.
And so this is continuing putting young June at odds with Ah-sam, because Ah-sam likes Printer Girl.
I think Lee Young is going to take out Mai Ling, and I think eventually Ah-sam is going to be the leader of the Long Z, and he's going to be head-to-head with the Hopway.
I mean, there's a lot of maneuvering going on here, but the thing about Ah-sam, there's a great scene in this episode where, you know, him and the Printer Girl are kind of in bed together,
mm-hmm.
and he's like, you know, like, it's all my fault what's happening to Father June, and she's like, look, you're a good guy. Like, you want to be that guy who was out there defending Chinatown when the riots were happening. And he's like, no, I was just out for myself. And she's like, no, you weren't. And she kind of shows him that, like, you know, the path that he's walking down is a good one. And then she reveals that she's been printing some extra.
I don't understand
stuff.
Why she did that. It was so stupid. She shows him, like,
thank you.
All of the shit she's been doing on the side, as though he's going to be like, yay, us? What for?
I don't think that it was a bad move. I think it shows that she's come to trust Ah-sam, and that, you know, she truly cares for
him. That was stupid. That was very stupid. She's literally stealing from his tongue, and his alliance was with his tongue.
Well, she made it clear that she wasn't stealing. She was just printing extra.
Yeah, but she had no reason to tell him.
Well, but it's because she doesn't trust young June, and Ah-sam knows that young June isn't to be trusted right now. And so, like, it was a smart move. He recognizes it, but at the same time, he's like, this is putting me in a very awkward position.
Exactly. That's the only thing that accomplished.
Like, just promise me you won't do it anymore. And she's like, okay, I promise. Sure.
Nothing was accomplished by her showing him her loot, except for putting him in a more dangerous situation.
Right. Yeah. That's
ignorance,
stupid.
Ignorance is bliss stupid. In this situation.
It was
like his,
stupid.
Yeah, his ignorance with this whole situation is more of a protection for him.
If you're going to lie, cheat, and steal, just keep doing you.
So
now if she takes off, though, you know, young June's going to have even more reason to not trust Ah-sam, because he's going to know that he told her to leave, right? So
yeah,
there's this. It's a no-win situation for Ah-sam at this point, I think. So
one of the interesting things about this episode is, like, Ah-sam did not have a fight scene in this episode at all. Like, there's a scene where he, like, punches someone, but it was mostly to, like, prove a point. And mm-hmm. This episode starts off with, like, the young Irish guys that got fired because they were, like, picking on the Chinese guys from Leary's, jobs.
Oh, yeah, and the Chinese guys that, like, robbed a grocery store and they get thrown in jail.
Two Irish guys who might have been the same dudes who got fired.
They are the same guys? They're the same guys that Leary kicked the shit out of to prove a point.
Okay, they went to a Chinese grocer and mm-hmm. stole food because they don't have a job, so now they're stealing food.
Yeah.
They get caught and arrested, and that's their storyline.
These two guys are fucking idiots. They're,
exactly, yeah. That's the whole point.
And so their dad goes to Leary, and it's like, hey, can you get my boys out of jail? They were just, you know, stealing to feed themselves.
Mm.
So Leary goes and for the first time meets Kevin Spacey.
What a scene. I feel like mm-hmm. Leary is, he's not as rough as he used to be. I feel like he wouldn't have let that stand.
He's also trying to play the game, but he's not
good.
Wise
he's not
enough to play
it.
The long game. He's just playing the game that he sees.
But the cool part about this episode is that after he fails to get the boys out, basically there's a group of young Chinese guys who saw the robbery, and they go and they decide to, like, jump a drunken Irishman. And so after that happens, all the Irish guys are fired up. They're like, let's go into Chinatown and get revenge.
And Leary walks in like, what are you guys talking about? You want another freaking riot on our hands? You're nuts. You're crazy. He's like,
and the Irish are like, yeah, we want the fucking riot. I don't know what that accent was.
That was weird, dude.
Yeah. But basically Leary sees that there's, you know, more tension and he makes it clear. He's like, look, we lost a lot of good men. We lost friends, brothers, you know, like husbands.
And he walks into Chinatown to go settle the score with Assam.
And this was the best scene in the entire. Not a single punch was thrown.
This was
intense.
Yeah.
So, and what's great is like, so Leary's walking through Chinatown and he looks and he sees that mural of Assam on the wall.
Uh-huh.
And the look on Jaeger's face.
It's like, you're fucking kidding me.
Oh, it was priceless.
It was great.
But then Assam with his entourage comes walking out of Hopway headquarters, and him and Leary have like a little tete-a-tete.
Mm-hmm.
And at first, it's very contentious. But then once Assam realizes what Leary's doing and he's actually trying to save lives, he's like, okay, well, I don't really run Chinatown. And Leary's like,
there's a 10-foot picture of you over there. You definitely run Chinatown.
Yeah, and so like after his conversation with the printer girl about, you know, being like a good, like the hero that Chinatown needs, Assam realizes, okay, I have to keep people in line. Otherwise, we're going to be, you know, burying a lot more people. There's going to be a lot more death and fighting. And so Assam finds like the kids who'd been bragging about jumping this Irishman in Atoy's brothel. And he kind of like slaps some sense into him and says, like, if you ever do this again, you're going to be answering to me. Mm-hmm. And everyone kind of realizes like, oh, Assam has the authority here. And that, again, kind of puts him more at odds with Young
June. And if Young June had been there for any of that shit, he would have ruined it.
Mm-hmm.
He would have gotten people killed.
Yeah. But that face-off between Assam and Leary, best scene in the episode.
Mm-hmm. I'd argue that the best scene is the one between Lee Young and Young June bringing his father back.
I would say the best scene is the one where Buckley fucks not a ginger.
There are so many good scenes in this episode.
It's a great episode. The only thing I'm upset about is I didn't get enough Chow and Big Diggly.
And the fast travel.
The fast travel thing. I hate fast travel in TV shows. Unless there's literally nothing happening, fine.
Or at least if it's congruent. So like, okay, it's a week later.
Yeah.
Father June's already in bed getting treated.
Yeah.
You know, stuff like that.
I mean, I think you're right. Game of Thrones has ruined fast travel for me. I am like, I've got freaking irritated
this
every
is
time
shit
since
we
then.
We never would have even thought anything of like, oh, five, just, 6 years
back.
Ago.
Yeah, he's back. Cool. But now we've got Game of Thrones, which the reason why we're so upset about that.
We got bullshit on everything now.
Yeah, because in the early seasons of Game of Thrones, they took their time.
Yeah.
Like, hey, you're going
to
travel
3 months to get here from King's Landing.
Right. And it was like 4 or 5 episodes before. Oh, it finally arrived. Oh, uh-huh. Cool. Wow. That was a long trip.
My love, we've been traveling for months.
Yeah.
Surely the dead can wait.
And then you get back to the later seasons and they're just like popping in and out of places left and right. And within one episode, and you're like, wait a second, what happened? And now we're like, now we have like that on our radar. So every time we see it, we're like, that's bullshit. But, you just blame Game of Thrones, guys.
The next episode is written by Hoon Lee himself.
It is.
And it should be a good one.
Yeah, you guys haven't watched it yet?
Oh. We watched it.
Oh, okay. I have to. Yeah, it's really very good.
We watched it after we watched.
Guys, I'm sorry. I've been so quiet. I feel like I'm dozing in and out of consciousness.
It's okay, buddy. Do you need more DayQuil?
Yeah, take another swig. Well,
I think I OD'd a little bit.
Just real quick, before we polish this up, man, what was your favorite scene in the episode?
I don't remember what episode we're talking about.
All right, man, you get some rest, buddy. It's been a long day for you.
Yeah.
I really, really appreciated the acting and the portrayal of Father June, Young June, and Lee Young.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That scene where Lee Young brings Daddy June back.
Mm-hmm.
That was, like we said, that was really good stuff. I really appreciated that. That was good acting all around, and I thought it portrayed that there could be some cooperation between the Tongs, which we're probably never going to get. But yeah, it was interesting. Interesting.
And Hong even says that at the end of the episode, where he's like, "It's like, hey, boss, if everyone's getting along and everyone's making money, like, what's so bad about that?" And
yeah.
Young Jun's is like, "Peace never lasts, dude." And I need to know that when the shit hits the fan, I got soldiers that are going
to
back
me up. There has to be only one head of house.
Yeah.
Well, it's not wrong. Peace rarely lasts.
So Game of Thrones, just like you said.
Yeah.
It's just like this podcast.
This podcast always, never lasts.
We're always fighting about something.
Yeah. Who's the head of house?
All right, guys. That's it for our review of episode 7. Episode 8 is next week. It is written by Hoon Lee. I've already watched it. I'll tell you, it's really good. Can't wait to talk about it.
It's probably one of the best episodes of the season.
Yeah.
We were going to talk about it today, but we didn't want to do it without Vader in the house.
Yeah, we have to. I prefer to have people in-house with us, so I'm going to wait until this sneeze fest.
And Vader's better when he's drunk on alcohol as opposed to DayQuil.
That's what we replaced him with today.
I seriously need to go take a nap.
Right, V?
There you go, V. That's our replacement for Vader. That's a booze.
I finished this one.
You did?
Yeah.
Oh, we need more.
Yeah.
Call the Shady Mile people. Call the Shady Mile people. We need more.
Listen to Ambush people. And this is more Moonka.
I just done stuff. Yeah.
Oh, man. All right, everybody. Day thank cool. you so much for watching the review. These are some of our most popular videos right now. So welcome. Welcome all of our Warrior fans. Thank you for watching the videos. It's a lot of fun.
It's so fun seeing and, all the people talking about Warrior now. I'm like, listen, I've been here since day one.
Right?
You don't know me, but I've seen you come up.
And shout out to the cast and crew who have reached out to us as well. Thank you guys so much.
There's a bunch of Warrior fan pages now, which is cool.
Awesome. All right, folks. Have a great week. We'll see you next week for episode 8. Stay sticky.
Stay sticky.
Say, what did I say?
Sicky.
Oh, I like Vader.
Stay sticky.
Stay sticky.
Stay sticky.
Bye.